Things are looking rocky for Angela and Horst. He feels neglected. She feels let down. He threatens to leave her. She says she doesn't care if she never sees him again. But then let's face it, German Chancellor Angela Merkel and her Interior Minister Horst Seehofer were never exactly soulmates. He's really not her type. But what would a breakup mean for the kids, the centre-left Social Democrats? And what about the neighbours? Angela's true love, the French guy next door, is worried about her. And even those argumentative Austrians over the road want them to stop bickering. So on this week's Stammtisch, we're asking, can the relationship between Merkel's party and her Bavarian conservative allies be saved? I'm Damian McGuinness, and joining me round the table is a team of relationship experts, all ready to play some Gloria Gaynor and dole out the words, "You're too good for him." My co-host is agony aunt Michaela Küffner, otherwise known as DW's chief political editor. Michaela, would you trust a man who threatens to walk out the door?
As long as he's still locked into that mortgage with Angela Merkel, he's not going anywhere.
Wise lady, yeah. Relationship guru Jeremy Cliff, Berlin bureau chief of The Economist, also joins us. Jeremy, is this a relationship with the future, or should they already be dividing up the DVDs?
I think they're going to stay together for now, but there are simmering resentments under the surface.
I would say more than under the surface, no?
On top of the surface as well.
All over the place. Also ready with some wise words is Philip Altmann, Berlin bureau chief for The Guardian. Philip, what would you recommend for this couple? A candlelit dinner, a weekend away in a spa hotel, or should they just crack on and set up their profiles on Tinder?
Well, one thing I've learned about relationships is that absence makes the heart grow fonder. So I think we already saw that with Seehofer when he went to Vienna just for the day. He already started pining after Angela when he thought he had found his new love and Sebastian Kurz.
Right, well, let's start with a reminder of the situation so far. Let's be honest, it was never quite true love between Angela Merkel's centre-right CDU party and a Bavarian conservative allies, the CSU. But how did this row start?
It depends how far you want to go back. I mean, we could go right back to wedding day and the tensions that many people suspected were there all along.
Basically, things have been building up for more than a decade, one could almost say.
Yeah.
And it all just suddenly erupted out of the blue, I'd say. You know, it's like when you're sitting across the table from each other at breakfast and out of what feels like nowhere, suddenly this major fight over migration.
Is this what happens over your breakfast table every morning?
No, we don't have many migration debates at home, but
more domestic things.
Well, in this case, Horst Seehofer pulled a 63-point migration master plan out from under the breakfast table and startled Angela Merkel with it, I think, early in June. And it took her a few days to realise how serious he was about this plan and how willing he was to take her to the brink about it. And there was one point in particular, his request to turn back immigrants registered in other EU countries at German borders,
That was the whole point about this whole row of the past week has been asylum seekers are already registered elsewhere in the EU, hasn't it?
Yeah, but he handed in that plan, which only Angela Merkel and him got to see, exactly the weekend she headed to Canada for that G7 meeting, and which found her in a rather stressful moment that weekend. And then she came back and basically told him, "You are not presenting this." And this, I think, in hindsight, was the moment where this got very personal. And 2 weeks later, we heard Horst Seehofer quoted that he won't be sacked by someone who he brought into the chancellery, which is frankly, at the very least, oversimplifying the power base of the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Because
he was also quoted saying, "I can't work with that woman anymore."
As with many rows, this was about much more than what it purported to be.
I mean, yes, what was it really about?
It seems to be this is about this long-standing antipathy that certain leaders of the CSU, the Bavarian Conservatives, have towards Angela Merkel. They dislike her leadership style. They find her, I think, a bit distant, a bit haughty. There are various grievances that have mounted over the years. For example, I know that Seehofer is unhappy that Merkel didn't get through to his mobile on the night where she decided that the German border should stay open. And these have accumulated. And I think that sort of long-standing antipathy, combined with a kind of blind panic about the threat that the far-right Alternative for Germany party posed to the Bavarian Conservatives in the state election there in October, combined to create this sense that they had to draw a line somewhere. And they decided decided to do so over this relatively minor subject of secondary migration from southern Europe into Germany.
Yeah, because it's not a huge number of people we're talking about, is it?
It's minuscule.
This is all about Bavarian politics. He decided to make this all about him.
And so why is it about Bavarian politics then? Remind us what's going to happen.
Well, on the 14th of October, there are regional elections in the state of Bavaria, and the Bavarians, always known to be particularly conservative, are under intense pressure, the CSU there, from the far-right AfD party.
And over migration, principally.
Over migration, and they got very spooked by the fact that the AfD did so well in those general elections last September, which in a way was a test run for them for what really matters to the Bavarians, which is their regional elections.
And so they're worried they're going to lose their absolute majority
yes,
to the AfD,
but
aren't they?
That much, it makes sense. But there was a point where it became completely irrational, where Horst Seehofer decided what Merkel came back with, and there was broad agreement that she came back with a lot more than most had expected.
Also came from back within from the Brussels, CSU,
from
EU
Brussels,
summit.
But at the same time, Horst Seehofer, who's also under pressure as party leader, there is intense infighting within the CSU, decided that he's going to basically say it's not enough.
To what extent, though, is this row about a clash of personalities between Merkel and Seehofer?
It seems to me that emotion took over here at the point when the polls started coming in showing that the CSU was losing support about this. This brinksmanship is part of a broader CSU strategy, which at times seems to have been inspired even by the likes of Donald Trump, to really cleave to the political right, to the nationalist right. And there are other examples of this. The Bavarian Conservatives have demanded that crosses be put up on the walls of all public buildings in Bavaria. Markus Söder, the Prime Minister of Bavaria from the Bavarian Conservatives, has said that the era of ordered multilateralism is over. And so it's part of that strategy that they took Merkel to the brink about this migration issue.
So Seehofer was thinking he could be a disruptor, he could be a bit of a Trump Brexit type character.
But with a clear electoral political goal to win back support from the AfD and get back into majority territory.
Which, according to the polls, did not happen.
Right, and yet they pursued this strategy beyond that point. And as more and more polling evidence has come in showing that Bavarians are at best ambivalent about the strategy and at worst being actively put off by it. Horst Seehofer's personal approval rating has fallen by 16 points, whereas that of Merkel has fallen by just 2 points. At one point, I think in about a week or so ago, the Bavarian Conservatives fell to their lowest polling level since records began. And so they've been pursuing this strategy. I mean, they have reached an agreement now, but until that point, it looked like they were pursuing almost some sort of Wagnerian death wish that they were going to bring everyone down with them.
It's fair to say that this isn't just about a clash of personalities, but is also about a clash of political styles. And I certainly don't want to act the Seehofer Versteher.
Oh, go on, Philip.
Seehofer. I'm a Schleswig-Holsteiner, after all.
No, that's true, yeah.
But it's fair to say that something that Merkel can't or has never delivered is a politics with big symbolic statements that necessarily resonate beyond the din of everyday politics. She, you know, she represents a sort of continuity and a steady course.
So exciting.
So Seehofer wants to, I mean, the Bavarians believe that actually that's something that German politics needs now, a sort of symbolic moment, a symbolic change of
tone.
The narrative,
yeah.
Change of tone.
Why are their personalities so different? Or in what ways are their personalities so different?
In every single way imaginable.
I mean, in some ways, Seehofer is a more conventional German political type. I mean, if you think back to the big overpowering male personalities of German politics over the last decades, Kohl, Schröder, these were all tub-thumping, sometimes quite provocative men who would engage in the sort of symbol politics that Phil talked about. Whereas Merkel is cut from a very different cloth. She is the opposite. She presents a small target. She does not get drawn into conflict. She holds back. She Merkels, as we say in German. She waits to make decisions. And that's not to say she's incapable of reaching decisions. It's just a different approach to how you navigate a political choice, I suppose, and how you communicate it.
Can I slightly disagree? I think I'm not sure Seehofer is a pure tub-thumping populist. I think he's an amateur populist, really. I think he has a very Bavarian Gemütlichkeit that actually I think he
coziness.
Shares with a sort of Biedermeier, you know, not actually wanting to really sort of shake everything up. That actually he shares with Merkel. I think the problem really is the dynamic of this boys' club in Bavaria, and that you have at least four alpha males who are all pushing, edging each other on. I don't think Seehofer, populism is a sort of big stick that he's swinging over his head and he occasionally slaps himself in the face with it. He's not that good.
He's a wannabe Trump rather than an actual
Trump.
Yeah,
he's just, I think he's gemütlich. Yeah.
Too cozy.
Well, it's a strange relationship. They sort of need each other and hate each other.
Well, you'd be glad to hear that Angela and Horst have in fact sought out professional help for their relationship issues. I'm not sure if you know this, but when he's not president of the German parliament, Wolfgang Schäuble actually has a nice sideline as a couples therapist. Jeremy, you look very sceptical about that. We decided to listen in to one of his sessions.
Angela, Horst, thank you for coming. I think your decision to take couple therapy is going to be good for you. Good for the government and good for Germany.
Bavaria.
Sorry?
Bavaria.
Ah.
Here we go again.
Horst, this will be good for Germany. Bavaria is in Germany. So where are the difficulties in this relationship?
I should have never made him interior minister. We were fine in a long-distance relationship. He should have stayed in Munich.
Well, there's at least one thing we agree on. Where's a man to get a good Weisswurst and Weissbier in Berlin? It's all tiny bottles of IPA and vegan sausage.
I think we are getting off track a bit. Angela, tell me more about these borders.
Well, we need a united solution for the whole of the EU.
Oh, well, we all know who you're trying to impress with that. Oh, bonjour, Emmanuel.
Well, you have to admit he's no Barack,
see?
But...
No, you two. Jealousy is not going to help any relationship. And by the way, what are these anchor centres you want to set up?
For the migrants.
Like a camp?
Blowing heck, Wolfgang. Camps? Are you having a laugh?
Ah, yes, no more camps then. But anchor centre sounds a bit like a prison, doesn't it?
Look, it's not going to be like a prison. People can move around. They just won't be allowed to leave.
Horst, how about a different name?
How about... transit centre?
That sounds like a compromise to me.
Sounds more like Horst is getting his own way again.
You and your stubbornness. I'm leaving you.
Fine, sling your hook.
But we can't survive without each other.
Well, you can sell your big idea to the kids. Andrea and Olaf, they ain't gonna like it.
I think we need some more of these sessions. Same time next week?
Okay, I bet you didn't know that Angela Merkel actually has a Yorkshire accent when she speaks English.
Well, she's a northerner.
Yeah, that's true.
From Hamburg, yeah. And Mecklenburg.
Absolutely, yeah. So it sounds like those two will be in therapy for quite some time. So we mentioned these camps, these border camps for asylum seekers who are already registered elsewhere. The new agreement has scrapped that idea. The latest thing is all about transit procedures. What's going on?
Political symbolism is going on big time. And now we have an agreement that also binds in the Social Democrats, who, after all, are the key partner in this coalition, as we keep forgetting. Actually, I forgot for almost 2 weeks.
Well, exactly, yeah.
It's like, oh, yes, and I guess the Social Democrats have to sign off on this as well.
Because they're also in the government, yeah. Okay, now, there are all these sorts of different names flying around. So our quiz this week is about getting to the bottom of all these various names and what they mean. Now, I'm going to play you all a sound, and you have to tell me what term this sound refers to, what type of camp we're talking about. So I warn you, this requires quite a bit of lateral thinking.
I'm not sure Horst Seehofer would pass this test, but let's go for it.
Attention, please. This is the final call for Korean Air flight 1.
Transit centres.
Yes, very good, Michaela. What's this sound referred to? What's the sound?
Well, this is an airport announcement, yeah. Which I'm sure is from Munich Airport. And it refers to the concept of actually bringing pre-registered migrants to this transit centre.
Because that's essentially the model, isn't it? The justification is, well, we do this at airports, so we could just do it at the border. It went from transit centres, not to be mistaken with transit zones, which is so 2015. It's now changed again to transfer procedures. So what exactly are they going to do in concrete logistical terms?
Well, the idea is that to set up these centres, which are, while they're on German soil, they're not legally on German soil. So it's sort of like before, the bit in between having entered a country and having cleared customs.
So they say just like in an airport, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. They're lawyers who say that doesn't actually make sense and it doesn't work. But they say if you hold people and process their application in this in-between zone,
it's no man's land,
it makes it easier to send them back.
Legally, they can only do it for 48 hours. Now they've just agreed, after pressure from the Social Democrats, to do it in police facilities, so not actually have the camps after all.
Yes, there was clear fears that you would have detention camps on German soil, and that's something the Social Democrats, that's a red line for them that they simply couldn't cross and wouldn't cross.
And legally dubious, humanitarian issues obviously involved. So
I think this was all factored in already in advance. This just went way too fast.
So you think they had the deal already set up behind the scenes, ready to go?
But I think everybody was in the loop.
Right.
Yeah. This rewording and recasting of transit zones is all about allowing the SPD to square its agreement with Mrs. Merkel and the Bavarian Conservatives with what they said at the peak of the refugee crisis in 2015.
Because they said
it was
they
a
would
proud
be
achievement
camps,
of theirs that there should not be these detention centres.
But if they'd blown up this deal, the government would potentially fall, which they don't want because obviously they can't. There are no states to face elections.
You could say that perhaps the Social Democrats have also saved the Bavarians' bacon in this one, because
if they really didn't want to do,
if they had to set up these transit centres, I mean, that would have been, they would have had the timeline. Suddenly there would have been expectations, you know, if in 2 months those transit centres aren't standing on the Bavarian border, then people would have said, what's this all about? And they had the whole, would have had the whole issue of possibly interrupting, creating traffic jams on the Bavarian border.
So politically,
I guess that's probably now the current solution is probably better for Seehofer, because the symbolism is there, but actually the interruption.
Right.
Isn't.
Not so to mention the fact that the original deal envisaged turning back refugees into Austria, whose government has said it's far from happy to do such a deal.
Okay, next sound. What else are asylum seeker centres being called? Very good, Philip. Go on.
Anchor centres, which is acronym for...
Yeah, because it's not actually a ship's anchor, which was what we heard just then. It's, in fact, I had to write this down, actually. Zentrum für Ankunft, Entscheidung und Rückführung. So, the centre for arrival, decision and repatriation.
And this was what... this
abbreviated
was,
to anchor for the beginning obviously. Of every word in German. Obviously, exactly.
This was one of the big ideas in that Seehofer had put into the coalition agreement was... The big controversy until this new controversy came along. The idea was to set up these centres all around Germany. I went to see a centre in Ingolstadt about a month ago, which was meant to be the model for it. The idea is that supposedly you can process migrants' asylum claims there more quickly because you have all the different institutions in one place, under one roof, effectively. So you have people who check the fingerprints, who go through people's smartphone history, and you have the legal representatives as well. So I guess it's the sort of the promise is that it would speed up people's claims.
But they're also controversial, aren't they?
Yeah, because when I went there, there was a full-on protest by about 100 Nigerians who said, we're meant to only be here for a couple of weeks. Some of them had been there for 8 months, and they say it is like a camp. The conditions are horrible because they're there in between. They don't know where they're going next.
And critics say it hinders integration.
They're contrasted with the way that these things are handled in most other parts of Germany outside of Bavaria, which is more local community-based hostels or former schools or other public buildings.
To help people integrate.
Where you're a bit closer to the community and it's perhaps easier for, rather than these large camps, it's a bit easier for migrants to start learning German and interacting with Germans. But it is an important point to make is that these are not formal detention centres. Migrants based in them are allowed to come and go.
But they're sometimes isolated, aren't they? And then if you haven't got money or resources to travel or leave...
I visited an anchor centre near Nuremberg where, you on the road up to the centre, you saw asylum seekers wandering up and down into town. But it was right out on the edge of this town. There was clearly not a lot for them to do there. This was not a space in which they were going to start acquiring German language skills and habits. It's not detention. The gates are open. You can come and go, although they were about to introduce a system where you would tap in and out. So at least tabs are being kept on people who are based there. But it ticks the boxes for the SPD, who said that they wouldn't allow formal detention of asylum seekers.
OK, next sound.
Barbecue centres.
Yeah, barbecue. So it's about temperature.
Hotspots.
Exactly. What are they supposed to mean?
Part of the agreement that Merkel reached in Brussels in a quest to satisfy the CSU. And it's an idea that's been sort of percolating in European policy circles for a while now. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, has proposed it. Sebastian Kurz, the Austrian chancellor, now at the helm of the EU presidency, is keen on the idea. This idea involves having centres or camps outside of the EU borders, probably in North Africa or perhaps the Balkans. Albania has been spoken of as one possible venue, where those who want to apply for asylum in the EU would have to go before entering the EU territory and make their applications. And it means that if the applications fail, then they're not even on EU territory to be deported. And this is roughly based on a model used in Southeast Asia. Australia has similar hotspots in countries like Cambodia and on various Pacific islands where Australia effectively pays those countries to process the immigrants for them before they reach Australian shores. And if you're on a migrant ship approaching Australian shores, you will be towed to one of those other countries. And it's a model that many see as a long-term solution to Europe's migration pressures. Others see as a recipe for humanitarian disasters, with ghastly camps on, for example, the Libyan coast, where thousands of asylum seekers vegetate and social problems mount while very few get into Europe.
Why are they called hotspots?
It's just another euphemism for a rather grim refugee camp camp.
To centralise this issue and to have like a stopping point before you know whether these migrants really are entitled to then come to the EU. But countries you mentioned, Albania already signalled it has no interest whatsoever. Libya is questionable, and the International Office for Migration and the UN Refugee Agency have already said that they won't be abused to give this a humanitarian cover, that they would insist on basic standards to be upheld. And anybody you speak to who's been to Libya will confirm that that is just simply unfeasible right now.
Because you're reliant on some rather dodgy governments, to say the least, aren't you?
Well, if they had a proper government, I mean, that would already be something. So this is all, there's so many question marks. It just raises more questions. It doesn't really seem to solve anything right now.
Okay, the last one, which is my personal favourite.
Car drivers, you are kindly requested to go to your cars now and to prepare to disembark under the control of the ship's officers.
A ferry.
Please do not start.
It is
start
a ferry,
your engine,
yeah. You look, I'll look a bit puzzled there.
A Dutch accent.
The key word there is disembark.
Disembarkation platforms.
Yeah, who can get the right one? Yeah, platforms. Regional disembarkation platforms.
I think isn't that another word for hotspot?
I think it's another word for all of these things we just talked about. Regionale Ausschiffungsplattform. Good long word for you there. I think that wins points for the longest and most complicated. I've actually counted 9 different names for various different camps, which essentially are quite similar in a lot of ways. What's the point of all these confusing, long, quite unclear terms that are being bandied around?
Well, this is so that the SPD can sell it as something different from what it opposed before, while they sound tough enough and systematic enough for the CSU to claim that they've got a serious answer to immigration issues.
It also covers up that Chancellor Merkel gave considerable ground on this while actually rescuing her principle of not wanting to act unilaterally and go it alone, and to signal to those European partners that she still stands for a European solution on this. So a lot of this is so much political psychology.
So we have a temporary compromise on this issue. Does that mean the row has gone away here in Germany for a start?
I think it's cooled off a bit. I think the interesting thing to watch will be whether this whole debate now moves south and it moves to Austria and to Italy. Seehofer travelling to Vienna, I thought that was a very interesting dynamic, that when he was holding a press conference with Kurz, and Kurz, who had been sort of portrayed, or maybe also portrayed himself as an ally of the Bavarians on this new hardline axis running through Europe. I mean, he very clearly said one or two sentences and said, yeah, over to you, mate, and basically made Seehofer sort of stutter a few lines. I mean, this is...
But isn't that because you can't have Bavaria first and Austria first?
Well,
they might
exactly
be allies, but actually they contradict each other.
And Italy is also now in this position where, you know, Salvini has been keen to sort of project this idea of the Seehofer-Kurz Italy axis, but they all want different things. The Bavarians or the Germans want to send migrants into Austria. The Austrians now talk a lot about exterior borders. They're all pulling in different directions.
So Germany, they've got their line, but the row is now going EU-wide, you think?
That's my impression.
The dynamic has changed more towards the direction Horst Seehofer wants to go, more along the Viktor Orban line of argument, which is just make it as unattractive as possible for people to even head towards the EU. And I think this is where Sebastian Kurz and Seehofer still see eye to eye. The big issue now is, of course, that the Germans are more interested in this what's called secondary migration, EU internal migration, because everybody wants to come to Germany, essentially. But I think that is re-entering the factual level. So I think that can get worked out. But we have certainly seen a new dynamic here, which is away from Angela Merkel's initial course on migration, more towards a fortress Europe. And internally here in Germany, I mean, no amount of scented candles can save what has been destroyed over those past weeks in terms of the relationship between Angela Merkel and her interior minister, but also her CDU party, where her own critics suddenly closed ranks behind her, and the Bavarian CSU sister party.
I mean, Phil talks about a geographic displacement of this dispute southwards. I wonder also if we might see a thematic displacement. So the CSU have achieved these concessions on migration. Do they wait perhaps until after the so-called Sommerloch, the summer break when everyone disappears off? Maybe in September open a new front on something like Eurozone reform, where they've suggested that they're not happy with the deals that Angela Merkel has struck with Emmanuel Macron, or another subject where they feel they can burnish their right-wing credentials before the Bavarian election in October. So on the emotion, we can assume there is still this sort of seething resentment of Angela Merkel.
To finish up, I'd like you all to tell me who you think are, firstly, the big losers of this political crisis and this political row we've seen over the past few weeks in Berlin, and who are the big winners?
I only see losers. The AfD are marginal winners, but they didn't go through the roof in the polls.
No, the polls haven't changed massively.
No. So it's, if you look at the latest polls, it still looks pretty much like last September. So the German voters seem to be somewhat unfazed by what's going on.
And just more irritated.
Very unimpressed. Okay. So I only see losers.
Right, everyone lost.
I'll specify a loser. I think Michaela is right. But I think the SPD, in some ways, yes, they achieved some concessions at the last minute deal. But this is a party that has been looking for definition.
The centre-left party
has been looking for definition against the CDU and CSU for a while.
Because, of now course, they're locked in this coalition within Angela Merkel's.
And now they've had this. And this is the SPD, the Social Democrats, have had their own nervous breakdowns in the last years, most recently earlier this year when they struggled to decide whether or not to join even this coalition. The last few weeks should have been a fantastic opportunity for the SPD to show that it was the responsible, mature, alternative party of government. And while they haven't disgraced themselves or embarrassed themselves, they just haven't in that present.
Jeremy, any winners though?
I mean, potentially the AfD. You know, they haven't. Their support hasn't fallen despite the CSU moving
so the
right.
Anti-migrant,
that says something about the resilience of the AfD vote. They did one poll recently, put them on 17%, which was their highest result ever. They haven't surged, but they haven't fallen. So I think they can feel fairly happy that we've all been talking for the last few weeks about their favourite subject.
Okay, Philip.
Can I just try and carve out a possible winner out of this? Is perhaps the Green Party. Oddly. They've also haven't been very present, but I was just there was a poll, one of those trackers by the public broadcaster ARD on most popularity ratings of sort of top politician. I was just noticed that the top most popular politician right now is a Green politician who isn't even in the chairman of the party at the moment, Cem Özdemir. You know, one of the two first German MPs with Turkish parents. Thought that was fairly remarkable. If you follow the polls in Bavaria, also there was one fairly recent poll where the Green Party was suddenly the second biggest party in Bavaria, supposedly this arch-conservative state. There's something going on there. They're not doing much, and that can also work for a party in opposition sometimes.
But they're very clear about where they stand on refugees, on all sorts of issues. They have clarity, don't they?
Yeah, they have an people identity, know where they stand. I think, which people find...
Which the SPD and the Social Democrats don't now. That's the problem. Right. Yeah. Losers of this political crisis.
I agree with the other guests in this round that I think they've mostly been losers. And I think we should also point out that Merkel doesn't come well out of this. I think she has actually adjusted her course. This gets lost in the international debate about Merkel, where there's always a pressure to sort of put her into a category as the big defender of liberal values. And she certainly talks like that, but she does go along with these compromises. I mean, a lot of people in German politics wanted her to fire Seehofer. She didn't do that. She came to a compromise. I thought that was surprising, and it looks weak to me.
Just briefly to finish up with, the other thing that happened this week in Berlin was that the UK Prime Minister, Theresa May, came to meet Merkel. Anyone notice that? didn't feature anywhere in the German press.
I was there, but they gracefully said nothing before going into their meeting. They were talking about how amazing their relationship will be after Brexit.
As usual, the British press in particular were looking for reasons in the current German government drama to think that Brexit would somehow become easier or the Germans would become more conciliatory. And a point that I've been trying to make to people back in London is that a more divided and fractured Germany and a more divided and fractured EU is, if anything, going to be less pliant to British cherry picking, not more so.
But I was struck by something, that Merkel said right at the beginning of her little statement before the meeting with May. Merkel said, ich bedauere diese Entscheidung. So she said, in German, you could translate that as I regret Britain's decision to leave. Her translator used deplore, which is the same translation that she used in February. Mm. So that's not a coincidence. It's quite hard, tough language.
Anyway, to cheer Theresa May up, our closing song this week is relevant both to Brexit and Horst Seehofer's shenanigans this past week. Any ideas?
Should I stay or should I go?
Ah, well done. Very good, Jeremy. That sort of classic, 1980s classic by a certain English punk band, The Clash. That's all for this week. Remember, do subscribe and rate or review us on your podcast provider. Thanks to Kate Brady for producing and for standing in as Angela Merkel. And thanks to Rupert and Fabian for a very convincing Schäuble and Seehofer. Such acting talent in this office. That's all for this week. And join us next time for the latest political chat from Berlin.
Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?